Welcome to the Pope St. John the 23rd Vocation Podcast with Monsignor William Fay. Here at Pope St. John the 23rd Seminary, we realize it's never too late to respond to God's call. If you're a man 30 or older, discerning a possible call to the priesthood, or someone who supports these later vocations, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome, everybody. This is Monsignor Bill Fay at the podcast Never Too Late at Pope St. John the 23rd National Seminary, just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. We're a seminary for older candidates to the priesthood who are 30 to 70 years of age, believe it or not. And these are great men who come here ready to give themselves to the Lord and with his encouragement and his grace to be led on to the priesthood. I'm delighted today to welcome a third-year seminarian. This is a four-year program. A third-year seminarian named John Williams, who comes from the great diocese of Springfield in Massachusetts. John, it's a pleasure to welcome you here today.
Thanks, Monsignor.
I wanted to talk. I've always been fascinated by people who come from large families, and you come from large families. Tell us a little bit about yours.
I come from a very large family. I'm the youngest of 15 children. We grew up outside the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and it's a beautiful story, really. My mother was my father's second wife. My father's first wife died very tragically and suddenly of a brain tumor just 2 weeks after delivering their 10th child. Mm. And the local parish priest knew my mother as a younger woman and introduced my parents on a blind date. And my mother not only adopted my 10 half-siblings, but also had five more of us.
Amazing.
And both of my parents are deceased, but right now they have 120 grandkids.
Isn't that amazing? Tell me a little bit about how you think coming from a large family may have had some influence or directedness with your vocation.
Absolutely. First of all, it was never about me. It was always about the family and the cause greater than self. My father sent us all to Catholic grade school and Catholic high school. So the theme of vocation in general, but also of priesthood, was always evident.
Hmm. Interesting. Are there any priests or religious in your family extended? Or?
So as far as priesthood is concerned, the odds are very small because 12 of my siblings are sisters.
Okay.
So I'm the only one to pursue a religious vocation. Who knows from all the grandkids we have.
Good. What a wonderful thing. How did you like growing up outside of Washington? Were you there for a good part of your growing up, or was it just the place that became most important?
I grew up, I lived in the Virginia suburbs until I was about 20.
Okay, fine.
And it was 15 minutes outside of the city, so very common to go downtown, walk around the mall, check out the monuments. Became a big Civil War buff, of course, because there were so many historical battlefields in the area. Incidentally, my neighbor was the son of Chief Justice Warren Burger.
No kidding.
So just the exposure to that was fascinating as a kid.
I bet it would have been. Yeah. I had the chance to live in Washington for 15 years, four as a graduate student and 11 working for the bishops of the United States. I love the area. I used to help out. When I was early in my years with the bishops, I had more discretionary time, and I had an opportunity to be able to go over and assist in Alexandria, and I really loved it. It's just a great place.
I think you knew Father McMurtry, right?
I did. Father Jim McMurtry, Monsignor Jim McMurtry, as I knew him.
So he was the principal at Bishop O'Connell for many years, so he performed the weddings for most of my older siblings.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. He was a very interesting man. He died very suddenly. I remember getting a call from the Bishop of Arlington, who knew that Jim and I were close friends. I happened to be in Rome at the time, and the bishop tracked me down. And he died very suddenly. He had a very short illness. Mm-hmm. But I always was amazed by him. He was one of the most gruff priests I ever met in terms of he could scare the bejesus out of you. But the affection that everybody who ever met him was outstanding. And to the day that he died, students were going back asking for advice. As you said, your older siblings were all married by him. Yeah. He was just that kind of person. He was a great example for the priests down there. I very much enjoyed my time. You've done some living in the military as well, John, and in the Marines. First of all, let me thank you for your service on behalf of all of us. That kind of service to the country is what makes us who we are. Talk a little bit about that, how you found yourself attracted to it and what your experience might have been like. And you were there for 4 years, were you?
4 years.
Right.
I was not very happy in college. Transition did not go very well. I didn't rush to enlist after 9/11, but about a year after 9/11, I decided that my education and formation should be found somewhere else, and college wasn't providing it. So I enlisted when I was 20. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, today is the 21st anniversary of the invasion of Iraq.
Wow.
So I was in boot camp at the time, but very soon I was over in Fallujah. Mm-hmm. And my battalion saw some significant combat in the spring of 2004. It sort of peaked during Holy Week. Mm-hmm. And it made a profound impression on me in several ways. First of all, we had absolutely no access to the sacraments of the church. There just were not enough chaplains to go around. So it was the absence of the ministry of the priesthood, which made a profound impact on me. Mm. And then I was a casualty reporter during what is called Operation Vigilant Resolve. And on Easter Sunday morning, three Marines from our battalion died. And I had to collect the information, which would eventually be the report sent to their next of kin. Mm-hmm. And not just the sacrifice of these Marines in service to their country, but the way they were killed. I mean, Torrey Gray rushed up an exposed tower to evacuate an injured Marine and was killed in the process. Danny Amaya had voluntarily extended his enlistment to deploy again because he felt an obligation to train the younger Marines. Mm-hmm. He was the first to volunteer to go into a building that was, we found out to be booby-trapped. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on about the examples of heroism that I heard about. And so they sort of set the bar for my standards of service.
Good for you. Good for you. I am privileged that three of my 17 classmates in the priesthood from Boston entered into the military, and they served. Each of them served in the Navy, and two of them were in the Marines. In fact, with Marines, and in fact, one of them was at the barracks in Beirut, Lebanon, wow, in the early 80s. Was that 83?
That sounds right.
Yeah, when it was, and in a collage that Time magazine did, he ended up on the cover of Time magazine, anointed one of the men who was wounded. And it was just an amazing thing. I never thought I'd have a classmate who was on the cover of Time magazine. Wow. You know, it was really something. So I have some sense of what's involved in this, and I really, my hat goes out to you and all those who have served, and to you who are listening, who are veterans. Thank you very much for what you've given to the country. It really is tremendous. Like a number of other men who have come to the seminary, you have some experience in high school education. How long did you serve in that role? And tell me a little bit about it, how you got involved and what came out of it.
Sure. So I served almost a decade at two Jesuit schools. One was a Jesuit high school / boarding school outside D.C., Georgetown Prep. Mm-hmm. Many people are probably familiar with it. And I applied for a teaching position there, but they had a greater need in the boarding program, so I was the dean of residence for a number of years. Mm. I wanted to make a transition to the classroom. I was looking to get out of D.C., which is a very expensive place to live, and so I took a job teaching at a Jesuit school in the Midwest, and I was in the classroom there up through the time I applied to John the 23rd. I enjoyed teaching. The challenge of this school is that It was in Indianapolis, so it's just not a huge population center. There aren't as many Catholics as there are in some of the other Midwest cities. And so on any given day, half my class were non-Catholics, and I was teaching religious studies. So I had to, I was challenged to come up with ways on presenting the faith in an attractive and original way to an audience that maybe had never heard of it before.
Mm. That's fascinating. Did you find that you were talking more, rather than getting into the elements of Catholic doctrine, talking about the virtue and the value of living a good moral life?
That sounds right, because many of my students were freshmen.
Yeah.
And we had to start on the basic human level of virtue and work our way up.
Yeah. Did you find, do you have any memory of this? Did you find that the freshmen that you were teaching seemed different from your experience of being a freshman in high school?
So I went to a small old boys school, and this school was co-ed. So that was a big learning curve. They interact differently, you know, that when boys and girls are in the same classroom, it can be a different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And I also noticed that, unfortunately, the technology has evolved so much. Mm. And the greatest challenge was getting them to read and think without looking for an easy answer. And then I taught through COVID, and that was very, very challenging.
Did you have technology that they could tune in from home, or how did that all
work?
We
were able to basically bring half the freshman class in one day, and then the other half would be at home. And then we would bring the other half in the other day, because we realized, especially for freshmen, it was really important to have that social interaction.
Yeah.
So we tried our best, but it was very challenging.
Yeah. You know, I often wonder, you know, this 3 years that we lived through that, you know, I wonder how transforming that was of the society in different ways, and whether people will be able to tell us and kind of capture for us what the effect of it was in terms of the society. There are things that happened to us that are life-changing. I think something like World War II was like that. I can tell you that having been a sophomore in high school when President Kennedy was assassinated, that had a huge, and the fact that 5 years later, his brother and Martin Luther King were assassinated, that had a huge effect. Having lived through the period of the Vietnam War, it'll be interesting to see what kind of effect having lived in this isolated world for a good at least 2 years and then going into the world and stepping back again and in. I mean, it took us a little while to get out of the whole thing. That's going to be really interesting. How's your experience here, John Benn, at the seminary? First of all, talk a little bit about when it came to you, I've got to make this move.
Right. Following up to the outbreak of COVID, my parents passed away within about 2 years of each other. Mm-hmm. This was expected, but it still is a significant transition in our lives. And when I was living in the Midwest, most of my family was still on the East Coast, so I was very isolated during the pandemic, and life slowed way down. I was beginning to tire of teaching. I didn't want to do this for the rest of my life. I did not necessarily want to return to the DC area because I had been away long enough to fall out of love with its fast pace and excitement. And I read an op-ed, I think it was in the New York Times, but it was an op-ed by Pope Francis saying how this is an opportunity to refocus on what's important and to basically dream big and ask God to work great things in our lives. And I had been thinking about the priesthood basically since a young man on and off. And a couple things fell together very quickly that convinced me that this was the path to go forward. I did enter spiritual direction. I did start going to daily mass. I took my prayer life a lot more seriously. And then it just a number of things fell in very quickly that for me was a confirmation that this was the way to go.
Good for you. Yeah. And your experience here, do you find it confirming?
Absolutely. I like to think that the priesthood, for me, it's a final recognition that my gifts, talents, and desires lie in that path, and as well as just this is the way I will be happy. Mm-hmm. And that's been confirmed in my 2.5, almost 3 years now. God willing, I'll be ordained a deacon on the 1st of June.
Good for you. And we're all very happy about that and encouraging and supportive. I'm fascinated by just the transition that you guys make. You come in here as individuals, and over time, the way in which you become, you know, a team with each other. We just had a wonderful little retreat here for some aspirants, people we call them discerners. You know, are they going to take the step into the seminary or take the step to approach a vocation director and move the process forward? And there were 17 men here. And just watching the seminarians attend to these folks this past weekend, to me, was amazing. You were really on your high game in terms of making them feel welcome, answering any questions that they had. And it occurred to me that you were doing for them, obviously, what people did for you when you arrived here.
Absolutely.
And there's something really stupendous that happens here, which is such a lovely thing. Tell me, what advice? We have a number of discerners who listen to our podcast. What advice would you want to give them in terms of sorting out, do I have a vocation or do I not?
The advice I would give is, first of all, take your prayer life seriously, enter spiritual direction, and go to daily mass or as much as possible. These are probably recommendations that everyone has been giving more or less on these podcasts, but that's at least what I did. I'm a morning person, so I started waking up earlier and doing a set period of prayer before mm-hmm. I went to work. Mm-hmm. I could typically go to mass at the high school that I worked at, but I also entered spiritual direction. And if you take this sort of phase of discernment seriously, I think of the gospel passage, what father would hand his son a snake if he asks for a fish? I mean, if you take this seriously and engage the discernment in a deliberate way, God will show you what his will is. Yeah. Whether that's to come here or other doors open, God will always reward you for your generosity.
Good. How did you find out about this place?
I had met a number of graduates of this school in the DC area. Mm-hmm. So when I applied through Springfield, I specifically asked to come here.
Good,
and
good for you.
You know, I think of the time when I got out of the Marines when I was 25. And I knew that going back to college at 25 after two combat tours, to go back into the classroom with teenagers would not work out. And so I finished college somehow while on active duty. And I think that at John the 23rd, our formation is tailored to meet our life experience and our perspective.
Yeah. And as I often say, you're in your own peer group. Even though there are men here who are decades older than you, the life experience that you've had is more connected to the reality of their life experience than it would be for someone who's just not there yet. It's a different kind of thing.
I agree.
Yeah, it's a different kind of thing. Well, John, it's been a delight to have an opportunity to have this conversation with you. I want to thank you very much for your openness to doing this, and you're talking as candidly as you did about the things that happened to you in life. I'm sure it's going to be very, very helpful to those men who are listening in, who are discerning themselves. But also, I hope those of you who are not looking towards the priesthood are learning something about what the Catholic priesthood is and what the road to it looks like, and that you'll encourage men that you think would be good priests. We forget that there's a large number of older men out there who really could discern a priesthood vocation within their lives if people would say something to them. So if you see a man who is single and you think he'd be a good priest, let him know that. Sometimes that, as you've heard me say so often, sometimes that's the key that unlocks the mind and the heart of a man to start stepping forward with a little bit more courage in terms of addressing this. I want to finish up today by again thanking our editor, Jerris Aziz, who's from the Great Archdiocese of Boston. He does beautiful work on putting these together for us, even with all the little mistakes we make in them. I want to thank Rita Casey, who's on staff here, who does the write-up of each of the little podcasts, and the one who gets the podcast published. And I want to thank Catholic TV of Boston here, although it goes internationally. I want to thank them for the great assistance they give us in making sure that these podcasts are done in a way that's appropriate and of a high caliber. Thank you all who are listening. I thank you, John, for being with me again, and we promise to keep you in our prayers. Keep us in yours, and I look forward to seeing you again pretty soon.
Thank you for listening, and be sure to check out our website at www.psjs.edu. Remember, the first step to answering God's call is making the call. 781-899-5500.